Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Veritas Medical, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archived programs, you can find it right there. Let me say a good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, we had a great show last week talking about the coronavirus and what goes on with that and what people need to understand about it and what they don't need to be fearful of it. But here's some things you can do to protect yourself. And if you do happen to be unfortunate to come down with it, here's some other things that you can do to help yourself. And so that's all good stuff. By the way, along the way, if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call or text. You can certainly do that at 806-745-5800 throughout the broadcast this morning. But no guest today, just me and you, so I'm assuming that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I was going to have you play that recorded show. I said this last week, too. My wellness navigators and I did a great little recording. They gave their testimonies, and we talked about our wellness class, and that, by the way, has all the information in it. Not just the information, but then the practical steps of how to implement your diet and lifestyle changes that will help give you resistance to corona and resistance to every other bug that's out there. So that class is starting this week. We're going to live stream it.
Oh, nice.
Because of the crackdown on public gatherings greater than 10 people. But I'm not going to do that recording this week because I feel like there needs to be a little balance and a little sanity and a little anti-fear. Anti-fear mongering needs to be put out there to try to balance this thing out. I continue to believe that this response is exaggerated and not based in...
Mike, out of it, we just talked about that for 2 hours on the show about...
If you just look
the
at the numbers...
Response, I'm like, what?
It's starting to really be pretty crazy. Now, I'm going to read you some numbers real quick.
Okay, I like numbers.
45 million... And now, imagine these headlines. Imagine this in the newspaper, Fox News, your 24/7 news channel, just blaring this at you. Imagine this. 45 million infections. 810,000 hospitalized, 61,000 deaths, which, by the way, is a 0.13% death rate. Those numbers I just gave you, those were CDC reported numbers for the 2017-2018 influenza. 45 million infections, 810,000 hospitalized, 61,000 deaths. Those are real numbers from a flu, and those are kind of typical. Every year the flu's killing, and the pneumonia from the flu is killing that many Americans at about a 0.13% death rate. That's, again, 2017-2018 CDC stats. And the reason I'm pointing this out is you don't hear about that. You probably didn't see any headlines about, man, 45 million flu infections, 61,000 deaths. You didn't see that all over the place. We sure didn't shut the country down. No one talked about it. No one mentioned it, hardly at all. Was not a big deal. You weren't doing drive-through screenings for flu at the local health institutions and, you know, shutting down every elective procedure and restaurants and the whole economy, and it's crazy. And I'm
so
not.
So you think the over, so you're saying, if I hear you correct, and I'm not, obviously those are CDC's numbers. That's not made up. We've talked about that before. But is it because we have been told that this particular virus, that it is 10 times more virulent, the mortality rate when compared to influenza type A or B, it's 10 times more deadly. Still yet, is that why you think that they're really panicked about it?
Yes, they're panicked about it, I believe, because of these projections. These models that were produced.
Just on regular flu.
And models based off some of the initial stuff on the coronavirus. So modeling is tricky, especially when you have a novel virus. You don't have good data, so you have to guess more. And a little bit off in your guess, and then you multiply it by millions of people, you get numbers that can be way, way off. So I think that's part of it, is we just are relying on these models that maybe aren't super accurate, and things that you may not be hearing about in the news. Like in Singapore, there are 200 cases reported. This data is from a couple of days ago, so it may not be 100% accurate. But the day I read that article a couple of days ago, 200 deaths in, or it's 200 cases in Singapore with no deaths at all. They didn't shut the schools down, and it's the curve has flattened or declined now. And even in China and South Korea, when you look at those numbers outside the Hubei province, you have a 0.8% death rate. That's higher than the 0.13 of flu.
Yeah.
There's a cruise ship data, a 0.6% death rate. So, yeah, that's higher than 0.1. And even 10 times higher than 0.1, you're going to be at a 1% death rate. But I don't think it's going to be that. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the death rate numbers coming down because we're getting more and more people tested now. The number of asymptomatic people walking around, the number of people with very mild symptoms, as you start to get more and more positive tests, then your percentage of death is going to go down. So I think it's probably going to end up being about what the flu is, maybe even less than a typical flu season, potentially, once all the numbers are really out there.
Well, so, that'll, if that's the case, that's a lot of numbers. And that would be, if you're panicking over this level now of, I mean, they're really low, relatively speaking, to the flu numbers we've seen in typical flu years, there's going to be widespread panic, isn't there not?
Well, there already is.
Well, I mean, but it'll be worse if we have the flu-like numbers. What do you buy into this whole flatten the curve business? You know, flatten the peaks and flat, so it's not jamming the hospital resources. And
I think what's jamming a lot of the hospital resources is the fear and the panic and the, I mean, go get tested. Or would you ever thought of getting tested, going through a drive-thru to get tested if you had a little cold symptom, if you had a little cough and a little fever?
No.
No. And depending on the reports you read, at the most conservative numbers, 80%, and I've seen up to 98% of patients with coronavirus have mild symptoms. 80% are mild symptoms. Maybe 90%, maybe 98%, depending on who you're going to believe here. But the point is, the vast majority are mild. That means a little cough and a little fever. The thought that we need to report on every single positive test. I just keep getting these news flashes. Another positive test in Lubbock. Another positive test in whatever town's newspaper you're looking at. You know, it just doesn't make sense for a virus that's this mild, where the vast majority, it's not affecting kids at all. Symptoms are mild. Yes, if you're old. Yes, if you got lung disease or if you have chronic disease. You know, I read a report the other day, I think it was 78% of the people, even in Italy, that are over 90 years old survived. 78% over 90 survived, over 90 years old. The ones that aren't, though, I read another report out of Italy, the ones that are succumbing to death, like 98% of those had two or more chronic conditions, and the average age was 79 years old. So the point being, if you're sick, you've got underlying chronic disease, yeah, it's going to be a problem for you. And that's going to potentially overwhelm the hospitals. But if we could back off on the mild and moderate cases and not freak everybody out, you know, that could mitigate some of that overwhelming hospital. But talk to any nurse and doctor in the hospital, and occasionally you'll see these reports every flu season. You know, UMC's on stand or whatever terminology they use, they're full. You know, there's beds, there's gurneys in the hall, the ER's full. Divert. They're on diversion. You got to divert to another hospital. We've got a healthcare, sick care system that obviously is malfunctioning. I've talked about the horrible outcomes we get across the board. We're the sickest of all the industrialized countries, getting the worst outcomes. Our doctors and nurses are stressed out. The hospitals are crowded. The nurses are working overtime and crowded and burnout. I mean, that whole system's ready to implode. And obviously, you put more flu season stress on that, yeah, it's a major problem. I'm not trying to downplay that issue, but it's been a problem. And you put a novel virus into the mix and you have a little uptick, even if it's a 0.1% uptick or 1% or a 10%, that's going to be completely, it's going to crush the system. So yeah, there's a lot that needs to be considered from a policy standpoint and legislative standpoint. But back to the reality of the actual disease and sickness itself from a medical standpoint, the reaction to something that's probably going to have the same death rate as flu or less, and it doesn't affect kids really at all, just something's way out of balance. And that's my main point. And that's not even getting into the quote-unquote crazy alternative treatments, which we will get into, 100 years of published data on oxidative therapies. 100 years worth. We'll talk about that later. So that's my biggest...
Not a big believer in the chloroquine as being the panacea to blunt the effects of it?
No, it's fine. It'd be fine to try. There's been some studies that show some benefit on viruses and coronavirus species for... chloroquine and Alinea. I did a YouTube presentation on all the treatment options, conventional, herbal, and then the ultimate, which hopefully these listeners and definitely hopefully my patients, the real treatment is get your own immune system to do what it's supposed to do. How do you do that? Don't eat sugar. Quit eating this processed grain. Quit eating pro-inflammatory oils. Quit eating iron-fortified foods. Quit eating foods devoid of nutrients. If we would steward this amazing... machine, I'll call it, this body that we have, give it what it needs and avoid what it doesn't, none of these viruses are an issue. That's the biggest take-home message here that we should be screaming. I've been trying to scream for a long time, and that's the most frustrating thing for me is, and my wife's been having to, Jamie's been having to calm me down because I'm wanting to get out there and do a YouTube video every single day and try to figure out how to make it go viral, to try to beat this, you know, shout this from the mountaintops that, guys, none of this is necessary. I mean, if you would just eat real food, drink clean water, move around a little bit every day, and be at peace, the four pillars, that's your immunity. That's your way to walk through this without having to worry about it. I mean, come on. Chronic disease? Nobody should have chronic disease. Nobody should have type 2 diabetes. Totally preventable and totally reversible. It's a dietary disease because we eat too much starch, too much grain, too much sugar. Hypertension? Come on. I mean, maybe I've been in my integrated practice for too long now, but I just expect patients, no matter what inflammatory disease process they have, to just get better. And they do. When you give the body what it needs and avoid what it doesn't, inflammation goes away. All these diseases are manifestations of inflammation. Inflammation doesn't come out of fall out of the sky. It doesn't come out of Mars. It doesn't come from nowhere. There's a root cause of inflammation. And when your brain's inflamed, we call it Alzheimer's and depression and insomnia. And when your joints are inflamed, we call it rheumatoid arthritis. And when your skin's inflamed, we call it psoriasis. And when your coronary arteries are inflamed, we call it coronary artery disease. When you're, you know, I could go down the list. The point is, it's clear that inflammation is the root of all this. And it's clear that diet and lifestyle, it's not my opinion. It's published. It's common sense. But also scientists have proven it. As if we need to wait around for science to prove everything. All these chronic diseases that are making people susceptible to coronavirus, how does that make you more susceptible to how does hypertension and COPD, and well, we know COPD, but let's just keep it at hypertension, diabetes. What does that have to do with coronavirus? All of it's a manifestation of the same thing. When your body's out of order, it can't function right. That's it. Your immune system cannot fight coronavirus when it's out of order. How do you know it's out of order? Because you have symptoms. You have migraine headaches. You have whatever chronic disease you want to name. It's just a sign that your system's out of balance. It's not functioning right. And really out of balance, I'm talking about your mitochondria. We've talked about it many times on the show, the carburetor of your cells. It's got to make energy and clear exhaust. If it can't do that well and efficiently and it makes too much exhaust and not enough energy, it will be dysfunctional. We call it symptoms and disease. Fix your mitochondria. How do you do that? You give yourself good minerals. So we talk about magnesium and bioavailable copper and the sea salt. good minerals. You get rid of the excess iron that's been fortified into our food, and it gets stored in your tissues, and it drives oxidative stress, meaning it drives the exhaust. You make more exhaust with all this iron-fortified food. Pro-inflammatory oils, as opposed to traditional ancestral fats that we need to be consuming in our diet that we were told makes us fat and clogs our arteries, both of which aren't true, and it's been proven quite clearly in the literature, but it's still believed by most Americans that you shouldn't eat fat, real fat. You should eat these heart-healthy fats, which I tell all my patients not to consume because they're omega-6 rich and they're pro-inflammatory. My point is the standard American is eating cheap, adulterated, convenient, addictive, processed food-like substances. It's not real food. It wasn't what God intended for your body. And there are consequences to it. The consequences, we call it disease, but it's mitochondrial dysfunction. And it will make you susceptible to coronavirus. So guys, there's zero reason to fear coronavirus, period. Steward your health, and your body is well equipped to take care of coronavirus. There's zero reason to shut down the entire economy, in my opinion, with rates of, let's say it's 1%. But it's probably going to be a 0.1% like the flu. The unintended consequence of that, I mean, who knows all the unintended consequences are. So just try and bring a little bit of reality and a little bit of sanity to this, even if you just want to look at the hard numbers. And I was reading an article, I've got it right here. I'm going to quote the flu death rates right now reported by CDC today for this year. Those stats, 61,000 died from flu 2017, 2018, and you didn't hear about it at all. And that's a normal, typical year. This happens every year, guys. You don't hear about it, but it's happening. But here's 2019, 2020. These are the initials numbers from CDC. 1,130,489 samples have been collected. So that's those nasal swabs for flu. Positive samples is 231,654. That's a 20% positive rate. CDC, this is a quote, the CDC estimates that so far this season there have been at least 38 million flu illnesses, because not everybody gets tested. So that 1 million was confirmed test. They're estimating 38 million with 390,000 hospitalizations and 23,000 deaths from the flu. That's CDC estimates for 2019-2020. So let's give some perspective. So 23,000 deaths from the flu out of 231,654 positive specimens means the death rate from flu is about 10%. If you do the math on 23,000 deaths out of 230,000 positive specimens, that's a 10% death rate. Now, not everyone got tested, but if you're just going to go by positive tests, which is what we're doing with the corona, that's a 10% death rate for flu. 23,000 already dead this year from it. Again, perspective, guys. Come on. This happens every year. Is it going to be a 10% death rate from flu? No, because not everyone's tested. It's going to be probably that 0.1 again. It's what it kind of typically is. So we just have to calm down a little bit. I think we started using some of these initial projections coming out of wherever. A few assumptions were made that now look to be not that accurate. So the government got real hyped up to try to prevent this massive millions of people dying. But now we can reevaluate. We can course correct. Unfortunately, politicians are hard to put their neck on the line and get out of their lane and, you know, go against the tide, that kind of thing. So I'm afraid we're just on this course, and it's going to take a week or two, probably seeing a lot of negative impacts of the economy shutting down to finally start to course correct some, I think. But if you just look at the numbers that are published right now, I think a normal common sense approach would be, hey, wait a minute, let's let the kids go to school because kids aren't getting infected. And 80 to 98% of people have mild symptoms. And when we come back from the break, which I know might not be time yet, but we're getting close, I'm going to save the second half of the show to talk about an article from The Lancet, 1920, Dr. Oliver and the Spanish flu, and using oxidative therapies to cut the death rate in half. We'll talk about a 1940s article published using another oxidative therapy called light, UV light. And it clearing influenza pneumonia in the 1940s in 72 hours. We'll talk about ozone, published data on ozone, published case reports on ozone and Ebola. And how do these oxidative therapies work? So hydrogen peroxide IV, vitamin C IV, ultraviolet blood irradiation IV, ozone IV, all these are oxidative therapies. How do they work? Why are viruses so susceptible to this oxidation? And we know they are. That is the virus's kryptonite, basically. That is the soft underbelly of the virus. All of them, and including coronavirus. We'll talk about that. And that will be absolutely mind-numbing and frustrating that there are therapies that have been shown in the literature for over 100 years to be germicidal. And we know this in industry. We use ozone industrially to clean water, to clean machines, to clean different things. I mean, we use ozone to disinfect and clean up after a fire, to clear out the smoke smell. I know hunters that use ozone to take the scent out of their hunting gear. I mean, we use it industrial all the time. We know what it does, but it's been used medicinally. It's been used inside the human body. The human body makes it. That's how the immune system kills these bugs. When you ramp up your fever and your immune system, well, what is it doing? It's making oxidants. Your white blood cells make hydrogen peroxide. Your white blood cells make ozone. This is the natural way God designed the body to kill bugs. So if your body's not quite getting the job done because you haven't stewarded it the right way, then yeah, come in and give it a little boost. Give it some extra peroxide and ozone from an external source. Somebody thought to do this 100 years ago. They did it, and they published about it. Unfortunately, a very popular therapy like ultraviolet blood irradiation in the 1940s, it was very popular, got put on the shelf because it's easier to take a pill. So when you start to put into the mix all these therapies that could work, should work, published data, they have worked in the past, and they're available in Lubbock, Texas, super frustrating. Absolutely want to pull your hair out. But then I go back to my source of peace, the Book of Truth, and we know the world is under a deception, the enemy, the ruler of this world, there's deception. What's the definition of deception? I mean, you don't know you're being deceived. So, you know, some people may know, but most don't. So anyways, we'll talk about that when we get back. But my main point is, fear not. Yes, people will die. A lot of people will die, just like they do every single year from pneumonia, complications from flu and flu-like illnesses. Tens of thousands die every year. What should our response be, though, to that? That's the big question, and I believe our response should be different from what it is now. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk more about that, more reality, more of how to get the fear out, and also how fear is the number one thing. Fear, when you're in a state of anxiety and fear, that's putting a welcome mat out. Coronavirus, come on in and infect me. Something that disrupts your terrain more than sugar, more than anything else, fear. Your thoughts. It absolutely hamstrings your immune system. We'll talk about that more too when we get back. So stick with us. This is Dr. Ben Edwards with Veritas Medical and Veritas Wellness, and you're the cure.
Welcome back in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards again. Right here on the show, talking to coronavirus, check out the website, Veritas Medical, for past archived programs. You can certainly catch it there at veritasmedical.com. To the text line we go. So what does Dr. Ben recommend about going out places? I want to get out, but I feel guilty when I go out, like I'm careless and I don't care about my fellow man. That's a good question.
Don't feel guilty. We need to live our life. If you're symptomatic, you may want to be a little more careful. But just like you would if you had the flu or a cold or anything, you don't want to cough in someone's face. You don't want to cough in your hand and touch a doorknob. You know, you want to be respectful of others. But if you're not symptomatic, and I understand there can be asymptomatic carriers, but again, you have to live your life. So definitely don't live in fear or guilt or any of that. Be smart, but I would be saving all the mask for the hospital workers. I would be saving all the extra hand sanitizer for the hospital workers. We have to have, you know, some common sense, basically. So go out and about, support whatever businesses are still open. You know, some of my favorite restaurants in town, and they're drive-through only, or not drive. I mean, you can only take out. I'm making an extra effort to go do that because they need that kind of support. They're getting hammered. And I do want to give a, this is off subject, but a shout out to Carpet Tech here locally. Great job, guys. There was a death in the immediate family, one of my employees, death at home. And they came and cleaned that carpet for no charge. So, you know, support these local businesses that are taking a hit, and get out there and let's try to survive this thing. I do want to mention something real quick on these oxidative therapies. And I'm calling for, you can mark it on the calendar, Dr. Ben Edwards called for this on Monday, March 23rd at 9:41 a.m., a new modern-day Flexner report. Mr. Flexner, in the 1920s, subsidized by Rockefeller and others, went around the country to make observations of medical education. And there were all kinds of medical schools back then, homeopathic medical schools, chiropractic medical schools, osteopathic, allopathic, herbalist, and others. And his report said, basically in a nutshell, I'm summarizing, we've got way too many different medical education curriculums out there. We need to standardize things so that the public can put their hope and faith and trust in a standard, high-quality medical education. And he chose the allopathic model, which is a pharmaceutical-based model. And we have proceeded down that model now for 100 years or so. It's time to reevaluate. Let's do 100th year anniversary of the Flexner Report. Do a new modern day report. Reevaluate. What are our outcomes with the choice we made to reject homeopathy, to reject chiropractic, reject herbalists, reject natural therapies, what I call non-patentable therapies? I'm about to talk about how ozone therapy cost about 90 cents a treatment. But let's do a modern day Flexner report and have someone independently reevaluate our medical curriculum. What are they being taught? And I can tell you it's leaned heavily, weighted heavily into pharmacology. And let's see what the outcomes are. Let's just do a nice statistical analysis. And then let's come up with a new recommendation on how to educate our doctors. Because when the top doctors of the FDA, CDC, state governments, even locally, I promise you, if you went and asked any doctor at any level of leadership locally at Tech, or any hospital leadership, or regionally, or statewide, or nationally, I can almost promise you, if I told them, will you look at this published data on ultraviolet blood irradiation? Will you look at this published data on IV hydrogen peroxide, IV ozone? They would laugh and say, that's fringe medicine, and get out of my office. the arrogance, the cockiness, and I understand where they're coming from, because I graduated from the same medical schools and curriculum they did, and you walk across that stage and you think, I just learned everything there is that could help a patient, everything that could benefit a patient with coronavirus, flu virus, pneumonia, sepsis, or any chronic disease. I just learned it. I just graduated from the top institution, one of the top institutions. I learned it all. And therefore, if some crazy doctor from Timbuktu says ozone, which, I mean, I'm not even going to know what that is as a doctor, I'm going to laugh at them. I'm not going to take them seriously, because if that were true, I would have learned it in med school. I understand that's the mindset of the top guy at the CDC, given web or at the FDA and CDC and in the White House, given all the press conferences. I understand the doctors advising the governor of Texas, the doctors advising the leadership at Tech. I understand that. But guys, we're in a season and a time where maybe we could have some open-mindedness and go look at Dr. Oliver's report. Published data, Lancet 1920, Spanish flu, IV hydrogen peroxide, half the death rate from standard of care. Look at 1940, the ultraviolet blood irradiation data, influenza, 24 cases cleared in 72 hours. Dr. Hamblin, PhD, listen to this bio. He's principal investigator at the Wellman Center for Photomedicine at Mass General Hospital, an associate professor of dermatology at Harvard Medical School, and a member of the affiliated faculty of the Harvard MIT Division of Health Science and Technology. MIT, Harvard, and Mass General, those are some pretty top-notch institutions. This guy's brilliant. He has published over 289 peer-reviewed articles, over 150 conference proceedings, book chapters, international abstracts, and he holds 8 patents. This guy's published more than any doctor, I can almost guarantee you, advising the governor and Texas Tech right now, decision makers. Brilliant guy. His research interests now broadly range in phototherapy for multiple diseases, including cancer, heart disease, and infections. And here's what Dr. Hamlin was quoted by Tom Lau last week regarding ultraviolet blood irradiation, which what this is, you put a, you draw out the patient's blood, you pass it by an ultraviolet blood, ultraviolet light bulb, and you put it back into the patient, ultraviolet blood irradiation. Quote, this Dr. Hamlin, I certainly think that UVBI, ultraviolet blood irradiation, could have a role to play in reducing the severity of coronavirus infection. In common with the flu, it involves excessive systemic inflammation and cytokine storm that UVBI could help mitigate. However, the historic data suggests UVBI can help with blood oxygenation in pneumonia. So there's the world's expert on phototherapy telling you he thinks it would be beneficial. And there's no side effects. And it's cheap. It's light. So all these viruses have a soft underbelly, as Dr. Robert Rowan stated recently. And Dr. Rowan's probably the world's guru of ozone, another oxidative therapy. And the way these viruses are vulnerable is they have proteins on their outer covering. These spike proteins are called. I mean, that's what the crown, corona means crown. And you look at this under the electron microscope, you see all these spikes coming off. So these have sulfhydryl groups. These are molecules that are easily oxidized and destroyed. Clorox will oxidize them, but so will ozone and that peroxide. And high-dose vitamin C induces the body to make the hydrogen peroxide. This is how these things work. They oxidize the sulfhydryl groups. Well, the sulfhydryl groups, those spike proteins on coronavirus, that's how they attach and enter your cell. If they can't attach and enter your cell, then they can't do any, they can't hurt you. So these oxidize those. So lots of data, lots of science behind it, lots of smart guys behind this. Unfortunately, we live in a world dominated by other motives.
Real quick on the text line, we'll go to the phones. By the way, texter wants to know, what is your favorite drive-thru? Since we're all limited to going to drive-thrus, if you were saying, oh, I'm going to drive through someplace, where would that be?
One of my favorite restaurants, I'm not going to put someone out there, is the, but there's lots of good restaurants in Lubbock, and one of my favorites is La Serena.
La Serena.
La Cocina de Serena. Yeah, it's a great little restaurant in the Cactus Alley, and she uses high-quality ingredients.
But they don't have a drive-thru, or do they?
They do now. I mean, you call in your order, and they will meet you outside with it.
That's true.
Yeah. Good. That's what most of these folks are doing. And they need our support, guys. I mean, Friday and Saturday nights, I'm sure they're top times to make their money for the week. And, I mean, they're just shut down. So.
That's in Cactus Alley.
Cactus Alley.
Yeah, I know where it is.
It's awesome.
I have not experienced that yet, but I need to. All right. Do you want to go to the phones?
Let's do it.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome into the You're the Cure show.
Good morning, Wade. Good morning, Dr. Ben. This is Sheila Hemphill with Texas Right to Know.
Good morning, Sheila. Glad for you to join us today. TexasRightToKnow.com, right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Well, what are your thoughts on this whole mess?
Well, it's a pleasure to be with the Lubbock audience because I believe that particular part of Texas has more a lot of sense that is kind of rare to be seen in this kind of crisis. Wade? I don't know if you recall, I was over there a few months ago regarding the hemp initiative. I have been blessed to be in direct contact with Dr. Robert Rowan, who successfully treated the Ebola virus in 2014 utilizing direct IV ozone. Along with Dr. Rowan is a gentleman, Jeff McNamara, who was also part of the team who is using the oxidative therapies that Dr. Ben's been talking about for surface decontamination. The beauty of oxidative therapies for decontamination is it's oxygen. So you're not having this chemical exposure adding to people's immune systems that they have to deal with. We are actually boosting what the body needs, which would be oxygen.
Right.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a natural therapy, and it's readily available. If you have an ozone generator, you just get you a bottle of oxygen, hook it up to your generator, and you produce ozone, which, by the way, lightning, when you have a lightning strike, that does the same thing, produces ozone. That's that part of that great smell after a rainstorm.
You wouldn't want to directly breathe it, but ozone, you can go to ozonewithoutborders.ngo, and they have various different information on use of ozone, from a disinfectant for surfaces, for internal use in a personal manner, in regard to insufflation, which is basically blowing ozone into various different orifices of the body. Now, what's interesting is that during the Ebola crisis, there was a treatment center known as the Hastings Treatment Center that had confirmed Ebola cases. And when they simply gave them very chilled ozonated water in the morning, a large glass in the morning and the evening, their fatality rate fell from over 70% down to closer to 30% just by having access to the ozonated water, which Lubbock is blessed with your integrative physician group. The two I'm aware of is Lubbock Integrative Medical Associations with Dr. Dalton, and here with Dr. Ben at Veritas Medical. When you have access to these type of equipment to produce this, and actually the ozonated water can simply be done with commercial oxygen instead of, or what are your thoughts on that, Dr. Ben?
Yeah.
For ozonated water.
Yep, we love ozonated water. We tend to see patients that are a little more sick. And when you can do direct into the body directly via IV, major autohemotherapy, it's probably a little more powerful. But for sure, water, and as far as treating the masses, easier to do that. And from a prophylactic preventative standpoint, definitely a doable, great therapy to consider.
It's simply very chilled water. You want it the colder the better, because it will actually hold more of the oxygen, of the ozone, onto the water. And if you keep it chilled, it can last for 2 or 3 days. So I can go into my refrigerator and open up my ozonated gallon of water, and I can literally smell the ozone.
Yep.
So now, because we're coming up on the hour, would it be okay if I kind of talked about what I'm hearing from the field?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because I work in hemp, healthcare, and health, in particular with the licensure administrative aspects of these board of nursing and medical boards, I have a lot of access to those healthcare practitioners. What I believe is being reported is a direct situation of over hysteria, that it is causing real shortages and real situations of lack of equipment, so that there are really people who are really infected who are coming to these hospitals. And now what I found disturbing when I talked to people about, well, why don't we get the people who aren't sick at these hospitals all into one hospital so you have one hospital that can handle the infected? What do I find out? These hospitals are maxed out under normal circumstances. Is that true?
Yes, exactly.
So when you're talking about, oh, there's gurneys in the hall, well, oh my goodness, because these hospital beds are maxed out under normal circumstances of coming in for surgeries or wound care or
chronic disease management.
Chronic disease management.
Mm-hmm.
Any type of emergency is going to create gurneys in the hall. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Any type of heightened infection, when the protocol was to have a new mask on each entry of each infected room, that is not happening. So there are truly infected people who are not, who our healthcare frontline are not being equipped with the appropriate protection. We are hearing reports that hospitals are not implementing simple protocols such as nurses come into the hospital with your own personal scrubs, but you change out of your personal scrubs into hospital scrubs, and then you leave those hospital scrubs before you go home. So when you have actual frontline nurses who are asked to be in contact with a virus, which from all reports is showing to be somewhat hyper-contagion, and not being equipped with the proper protection, you're going to have enhanced, I don't know if hysteria is the right word, but a lot of fear that you were talking about, Dr. Ben.
Yeah, and it's unnecessary fear. I mean, we need to be smart about it. We need to be, I'm not against a smart quarantine, but when I said that fear is the number one disruptor of your terrain, and it's like putting a welcome mat out for the coronavirus to come into you, I mean, how much increased infectivity is the coronavirus when you're in a state of fear? And that's things that people need to be aware of, need to be taught, and need to know that they have power over this. They can take control of their lives and don't have to rely on.
So I have been working diligently, predominantly since March 10th, with the House Public Health Committee had a hearing on coronavirus that was only by invitation only. I have been in communication through email and some meetings that I've been conducting, trying to get our state leaders who are making these decisions on what implementation should be utilized to understand the simple, feasible therapy of ozone for the disinfecting of rooms, for water, for using water to help boost people so that when they drink the ozonated water, if they've caught a virus down their esophagus, well, that's going to help. It will help by boosting the amount of oxygen, which all by itself will help the body, the immune system, to fight this, but also to have the medical community understand the benefit of direct IV ozone, which is a five-minute process with equipment that simply consists of an ozone, medically-grade ozone generator, along with medical-grade oxygen. This is doable. And, in fact, there's going to be people in your audience that go, I have an ozone machine because I do carpet cleaning, the call-out you did earlier, Dr. Ben. There are people in the community that have ozone generators. Now, those a lot of times are for air, which is like an air filter that can put in ozone, and that's not necessarily what we're talking about when we're talking about trying to contain a contagion like a virus. The disinfecting would need to have, at least at a minimum, a oxygen concentrator to be able to get the right parts per million. And this information is going to be coming out more on my website, which is TexasRightToKnow.com. I am patiently trying to get through the right channels to get this to the state. I have been in contact with the Senate and the Health Committees, the regional and chief of the Texas Emergency Management, the Texas Nursing Association, Medical Board, Board of Nursing, Medical Board, have all been emailed by individuals who are helping maneuver the maze trying to get the information. I am now currently trying to get directly to the commissioner and assistant commissioner of DSHS, which is kind of where I've gotten to. So, Wade, stay tuned. This may come to a point where we need more input from the public to help get this communication to our elected officials. But right now, I do not want to create an overload to their already overloaded offices, but stay tuned.
Okay, sounds good. We appreciate that, Sheila.
Thank you, Sheila, for trying to bring some measure of hope and sanity and for all your efforts in getting some complementary and alternative treatments to be more accepted by the mainstream. There's lots of benefit to that, so thank you for all you're doing.
Yeah, no doubt.
Thank you.
And keep us updated.
Okay, yeah, keep us updated, Sheila. Appreciate that call. Very good stuff, but How about, you know, the ozone machines? We have one here. I haven't set it up yet, but maybe I should let it kind of go in the control room here. Well, if it was you, would you put it in here or put it in your home?
wherever you're spending the most time. But now, one thing with ozone and machines, and the guys that do this, like that clean your house when you have smoke damage and stuff, they'll tell you it's best to be out of the house because, I mean, although it's heavy, it will sink to the floor. But if you start breathing that in, it can induce bronchial spasm.
Coughing.
Yeah, you'll start coughing. And in someone who has asthma or something like that where they can already spasm their airway down, you know, you definitely need to be careful. So I'd follow the manufacturer's recommendations as far as that kind of thing goes. You know, medicinally speaking, we don't do it. We don't ever recommend breathing it in. I mean, we do it through the blood. And rectally. Rectal is another great way. And there's another website, simply03.com. They have lots of great education and resources, and they also have products for sale there if someone's interested in some home ozone therapy. So, I mean, these are legal things to do. Some states don't recognize this at all. Other states have laws in place to protect complementary and alternative medicine, and I know Texas is one of those states. And we have to be careful about defining things as curative or treating this disease because FDA is in charge of that definition. And a drug is, by definition, the only thing that can prevent or cure disease. So what these oxidative therapies are doing are supporting your own immune system. They modulate the cytokine storm. Cytokines are these chemicals that get released by the immune system to try to fight infection. And you can get an overwhelming response of cytokines, and that's actually what people die from, the cytokine storm, we call it. So sometimes there's an overreaction of that, and sometimes there's an underreaction of that, and that's what ozone does is modulate it, meaning bolster it up, push it up if you need more of it, and bring it down if you need less of it. Also, studies show that ozone increases your oxygen uptake in the blood, in the cells, which obviously is very beneficial since these viruses don't like oxygen. And we've talked about the direct germicidal effect of oxidizing these sulfhydryl groups on the spike proteins of the viruses. So we can clearly state what the literature shows, what the published peer-reviewed data looks like. You can talk about published clinical reports like Sierra Leone and Ebola that Dr. Rowan talks about, the four cases of Ebola treated with ozone and were symptom-free in 72 hours. I can just state that as a fact. You know, can't claim that ozone is what was responsible for that asymptomatic state in 72 hours, but it at the very minimum should want us to sure investigate that more. And that's what, if you're a skeptic physician out there, a researcher, this data that's been out for over 100 years should at the minimum make you think, maybe we should do some more studies, some bigger studies, some more thorough. Let's replicate. Just like the vitamin C studies I talked about last week. You know, it's clear in the ICU setting. Mortality rates dropping from 40 and 60% mortality rate in these influenza pneumonia septic patients to 8%, 10%, 14% mortality. At the minimum, if you want to criticize that study because it maybe wasn't big enough or didn't have this or didn't have that or whatever, at the minimum, there's enough evidence there saying that we should say, let's study this more, especially since it's just vitamin C and there's no downside to it.
What about this text? How do you get oxygenated water? Oxygenated water. I mean, that's kind of interesting.
You'd have to purchase an ozone generator and an oxygen tank, or you might can use an oxygen concentrator. And what an ozone generator does, when oxygen comes into it, and an ozone generator is just a small little machine about the size of a shoebox, and you put oxygen coming in one end of it, there's an electrical spark, basically, think of lightning, but this little electric charge, and what that does is separate the O2, oxygen that's in the air is O2, two oxygen molecules, it'll separate it momentarily, and some of those oxygen molecules, now singlets, will combine into O3. That's what ozone is O3, three oxygen molecules. So it's just an electrical charge is emitted, and some of that O2 becomes O3. It's a very small percentage, I want to say, Dr. Rowan, hopefully we can have him on next week. He could tell us for sure. I want to say it's about 1 or 2% only is O3. So the vast majority is still O2. But then that's what comes out the other end. That's what we pull up in the syringe to administer medicinally is it's pure oxygen. Some is O2 and some is O3. But you can get the same box, the same shoebox at home. There's home ozone generators, and you get an oxygen source like an oxygen concentrator. And you produce ozone, and then you can do it, put it into the water. So you just bubble that through a little tube. You bubble that oxygen through the water, and the water is actually reacting with and taking, absorbing some of that ozone. And then you drink it. You can do it rectally. There's patients that will do it in their sinus. You get a syringe of this gas. It's clear gas and into the sinuses for chronic sinusitis. There's ladies that have done it vaginally for different disease processes there. Lots of different ways to administer it. Simply O3 bubbles it through oil, and we do this at our clinic too, or sell their products. So coconut oil, sesame seed oil, do these different oils. You bubble that gas through it. The oil picks up the ozone, and so you apply that oil topically. Burns, insect bites, non-healing wounds, abscesses, you know, any precancers, different skin ailments, and it can provide some benefit that way.
Hmm.
So lots of different ways, but that's the cool part of natural medicine. Natural medicine is all about finding, utilizing things that are naturally occurring that come alongside your natural healing processes and bolster them, support them, improve them, urge them on. Unfortunately, they're not patentable. Unfortunately, meaning so they're not promoted. They're not taught. They're not promoted. There's not a single medical school that I know of. There's not a single medical school graduate that I know of in the United States today that if you asked them about medicinal ozone or ultraviolet blood irradiation or even IV vitamin C would know about it. It's not in the curriculum. It's not taught. And that's why I'm calling for a modern day Flexner Report, 100-year anniversary of the Flexner Report, and let's reevaluate medical curriculum and education. I mean, I think we all understand money talks in this world, unfortunately. The root of all evil is the love of money. And if you can't patent oxygen and you can't patent vitamin C and you can't patent light, it's probably not going to get a place at the table.
It would be nice, though, if you could go buy O3 bottled water ready to go.
Yeah, it would. The problem is that the O3, over time, it will go
diffuse
back to O2.
It's not shelf stable.
Exactly.
It wouldn't last long.
Yeah. So it doesn't meet the criteria for the typical businessman that it can be long shelf life and high profit margin. Yeah, it's low cost to make, but there's not a big profit margin.
You have to drink it right away, fairly soon.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say, oh, I'm going to do a few bottles for work and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Last word. I know we got to go. This is to those who are submitted to Jesus Christ and the sovereignty of God. The spirit of fear has been defeated. The spirit of fear is a spirit coming from the kingdom of darkness, not the kingdom of light. So please don't submit yourself to that kingdom of darkness. You do not need to be fearful. I did not give you the spirit of fear, it says in Scripture, in over 400 different commandments of thou shalt not fear. So please don't fear and put your trust and hope in not the systems of the world, influenced by the love of money. Put your hope and faith in the source of true peace, which is the truth, and that will set you free from this fear and anxiety. So be at peace. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Ben Edwards with You're the Cure, veritasmedical.com, veritaswellness.health. We'll see you next time.